Well, first, Ron, you are one of the world's top travel bloggers. Anybody can see that if they go onto Google. How long have you been doing it on a full-time basis, and maybe you started off part-time, but how did your journey into travel blogging begin?
Well, it was something I kind of fell into. So I started travel blogging back in 2011, and at the time, I was actually a bartender on a cruise ship. And I just started documenting my travels as like a kind of online journal sort of thing. And then one thing kind of led to another. And I started getting more traffic and people started asking me questions. And I started giving out more advice. And it just led into me doing it as a full-time career.
So was it quite a nerve-wracking decision to decide to give up a paying job and sort of forge ahead on your own?
Oh yes, it was very nerve-wracking. It definitely had the ups and downs. You know, as any entrepreneurial type personality will tell you, it has its ups and downs. But it was a bit nerve-wracking. Yeah.
Did you get any pressure from friends and family to get a proper job?
Surprisingly, no, because you hear a lot of travel bloggers talk about their friends and family. They're always saying, you know, you shouldn't be traveling this much. You should go get a job, you know, grow up and be a typical adult, figure. And my family was actually very, very supportive of the decisions that I made. And they were kind of behind me in every way. And not to mention, especially my mom and my dad, they really enjoyed the travel perks behind their son being a travel blogger. So they're always behind me on that.
Well, that's good. So how do you organize your time then? Do you limit the amount of time you're away from home? What's your kind of, if there is such a thing, an average schedule over an average month for you?
So it can vary from month to month, depending on where I'm at or, what activities I have planned or, you know, what kind of tourism boards or countries I'm working with. Right now, I would say my average month is, surprisingly, it's like your typical 9-to-5 job. It's just my job isn't in a cubicle somewhere. It's, you know, at a cafe or, you know, at a resort that has Wi-Fi, and I just work from my computer from there. So I still do work anywhere between 6 to 8 hours a day. And of course there's some days and some weeks where I can take 3 or 4 days off a week, but I still do put in the amount of hours that anybody else would. It's just that I have the luxury of being able to have a Mai Tai and, you know, and sitting at a cafe or at a beach at the time I'm doing it.
Do you ever get slightly stressed in the places you go to that may be really off the beaten track because you can't get Wi-Fi? Because I guess if you have to be connected, as you do to some extent, and you're reliant on Wi-Fi, some of the places you're going to go are not going to have fast fiber broadband, are they?
Oh, no. There are certainly some locations. I know whenever my first major trip I did international was a few years ago. I believe it was in 2013, I want to say. I went to Southeast Asia for 8 months, and I was backpacking around there. And some locations, you know, the more popular locations like Bangkok and Chiang Mai, they had really good Wi-Fi. It was nice and fast. But once I started venturing off the beaten path to like northern Vietnam or like the jungles of Laos in that area, I was in villages and they didn't have Wi-Fi, let alone, you know, electricity in most areas. So that took a lot of pre-planning to be able to make it work. And that's the nice thing about being a travel blogger and, you know, kind of running my own business that way, is I have the flexibility to do that.
So do you tend to write in situ? So if you're in, say, Myanmar, do you write there and then, or do you wait till you come back home and look at pictures and notes and write it up afterwards?
I mix it up. So I'll do a little bit of writing while I'm abroad. And then I'll do a little bit whenever I come back home or once I get to a location where the Wi-Fi is good and I decide to settle down for a month or two. So like I can be in Thailand for a month, you know, travel around, and then I can go to Hanoi in Vietnam, and then I'll turn around and write about whatever I experienced in Thailand while I'm in Hanoi. And, you know, it can vary from place to place.
So can you estimate how many days in a year you're actually away from home?
I would say I'm away from home a good, like a minimum 6 months out of the year. And when I say home, I mean like my home base. So wherever I decide my home base is going to be at that time. I don't actually have a physical home address, so to speak. So, but I'm usually traveling at a minimum 6 months out of the year, maximum about eight, nine months out of the year. And the rest of the time I try to slow down and settle down in one or two different locations, just so I can kind of do the whole business aspect of blogging.
So you really are living the dream. You are actually just deciding. It's like that old song, isn't it? Wherever I lay my hat, that's my home.
Yes, yeah, yes, I guess you can say that.
So what was the trigger point for you where you thought, it's going to be okay, this is going to be a business that can sustain me? What event or series of events gave you comfort there?
Well, it's kind of hard to really pinpoint a certain event or a certain time whenever it all really did fall into place. Like, I started feeling a lot more comfortable about my decision of being a full-time blogger here this past 2 years or so. And that's just because everything kind of fell into place at once. There was no big major, you know, event or anything that I could really narrow down on. I just started getting a good social media following. I started getting a lot of traffic from Google because I was ranking in Google. And then once that happened, of course, that traffic, my audience, they would turn around and either purchase like my ebooks, or they would watch my videos where I would get compensation through AdSense, through YouTube, and just different sources like that. So I wouldn't say that there was a exact part or equation to kind of put together, but for me, it just kind of all fell together.
Have you had to be quite analytical and scientific in your approach to try and get up rankings on search engines and get more likes? I mean, do you approach it in a very methodical way?
I do keep an eye on my analytics, a very close eye on them. So I guess you can say I do follow that route a little bit. Google Analytics, Google's the big search engine nowadays. You make it with them, you make it around the world, so to speak. But yeah, I definitely do keep an eye on my analytics. And just watch, where my traffic sources are coming from. And I kind of narrow down and focus on the topics that people are researching and they're looking for information about.
So you're led by what you find people want to know about. You actually seek out what has been discussed in the, blogosphere or on the internet, and then you write articles to meet that demand.
Yes and no. So I write the articles, so I seek out the information and write articles about what people are looking for, and that would probably be about half of the articles that I write about, and then the other half is what I actually enjoy writing about. So it's, you give a little, you take a little. So like I give a little as far as like writing about stuff people want, just so I can get traffic and information or traffic and people to visit my blog, and then once those people visit my blog and they start subscribing to my newsletter and stuff like that, they'll turn around and see what else I have to offer. And then some of my more personal blog entries, people get a lot of interest into.
So you are quite an entrepreneur, aren't you? You've had to be, to show a strong business brain here. Was that something that you had before your travel blogging days, or have you kind of learned on the fly?
I would say it's definitely something I learned on the fly. I've always had the entrepreneurial spirit. I've always had the entrepreneurial spirit, and I've always wanted to kind of do things my own way and, really think outside the box. And that even went back to like my normal 9-to-5 job whenever I started working a normal job, before I started blogging. And, but yeah, I've always definitely taken the entrepreneurial route whenever I could.
Do you target what you write? Do you have a subject in mind, a kind of person, maybe somebody you know, just an image of the recipient of your blog?
I don't narrow it down too much. Usually, I always try to keep it around the adventure travelers because I love adventure and I love, traveling for those types of, the things that people don't normally see, or the things that the average Joe doesn't usually do. Like skydiving or shark diving, whitewater rafting, those sort of things. So I try to write towards that type of demographic. And usually that just generally falls into like both males and females between the ages of 18 and like 55. But I get audience members and people visiting my blog from all sorts of ages and backgrounds.
Have you found any part of your work has increased in the percentage of your time it takes up? A lot of people talk now about them having to create more video. So is there something that you're doing a lot more of now than you did when you started?
Yes. So whenever I first started my blog, I began writing content, because whenever you're starting a blog from scratch, you need that traffic and you need something that's going to get yourself established. So, you know, content is key. You know, the old saying, content's always key, especially good content. And now that I've gotten, you know, somewhere around 500 articles on my website, like, I have my content base established, so I don't have to write nearly as much as I used to. And now I focus more on marketing.
So the marketing takes up a much bigger percentage of your time, I guess, because you can sit back to some extent because you've already got the library of content there.
Yes, I would say so. Yeah, I would say now that probably 80% of my time goes towards marketing. 10% of my time will go towards like actually writing content, and then the other 10% will go towards like answering emails or coming out with new products.
So do you think it's more of a business then, or do you get a buzz from the seeing the results from marketing? I just ask because travel bloggers generally go into it because they like writing, they like having the experiences, but you're having to kind of hunker down and do lots of proper, serious work here.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, the whole reason why I went into travel blogging is because I have a real big passion for both traveling and blogging and writing. But I found out that, you know, this can actually be a sustainable, you know, life for me, and, you know, I can create a living wage from this. So now I'm kind of hunkering down because I'm coming up on 27 years old now here in actually a week. So so I started thinking, hey, maybe I should hunker down just a little bit more. I can still go out and enjoy and travel and, you know, enjoy the lifestyle that I've created, you know, because by all means, it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy what I do. But I'm trying to figure out the business side of it a little bit more and see how I can bring in more traffic and more audience members.
What's the nicest thing you've read about your blog, the nicest comment, review, praise that you've come across?
They can vary depending on the type of article. I would say I enjoy a lot of the comments or emails that I come across whenever they say that I inspire them by what I do, you know, as far as like going out and having different experiences and, you know, following my dream of doing what I love to do instead of just settling for something, you know, to pay the bills. So I would say the biggest praise I've definitely gotten was the inspiration that I've given others.
Now, obviously, people read your site for a number of things to find out about destinations. You do a lot of work as well on giving, you know, general advice too on ways to, you know, make travel more affordable, that kind of thing. But in terms of the places you've been, which destination has created the most interest for you? Where have you had the most feedback?
For me personally, so I grew up in the state of Florida, so I've always been surrounded by beaches, and I've always had a, you know, passion for being around the ocean. I love the beach. I love, you know, surfing and diving and, you know, those sort of activities. And I would say my biggest location that I've had a lot of feedback from that I also happen to enjoy the most would be like the Caribbean islands.
Because you've been to quite a diverse range of places, haven't you?
Yeah.
From some places that, you know, certainly the UK government says you shouldn't really go to.
Yeah. I kind of try to think even there are places that, you know, both my parents and friends and family and, you know, my audience members are like, we don't really feel comfortable about you going to these locations. And I just like to try to see the bright side of the places I go to. So I travel there. And as it turns out, I've never had a bad experience.
Do you tend to tell people that you've been to the West Bank after you've returned from the West Bank?
Say what now?
Would you tell people that you've been to the West Bank after you get back from the West Bank rather than beforehand?
Yeah, that would be after I get back, usually.
Yeah, because I might imagine people might want to discourage you from going there. But you seem to enjoy it. You enjoyed that destination.
To the West Bank?
Hmm.
Oh, I personally haven't been there. I have a few riders that also blog.
Ah, okay.
Yes, so right. That was one of my riders that went there.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that, actually, whether you collaborate with other people. Do you use many other writers?
Not very many, only a select handful that I've picked out myself, just because either I have a background with them or I've traveled with them extensively, or we've just collaborated because either they have their own personal blog. Or they just enjoy writing and they showed me some of their content and I really enjoyed it. So I throw it up on my blog so, you know, they could share it with the world.
Now, is that something you started originally, working with other people, or has that just evolved because of maybe your workload?
I would say this definitely evolved because of my workload. Not to mention, it's not just because of that, because, you know, I can constantly pump out articles if I really needed to. If somebody has information that my audience would, you know, really enjoy or they find useful, you know, I'm more than happy to provide it on my blog, a platform for them to share that information.
If you get other people to write for you, sometimes people do things for free, but sometimes it costs money. So do you have a system in place for remunerating people who write for you, or do they do it just to get on your blog?
A little bit of both. So I find that if they have a business, like an actual physical business, and they're selling products or services, then I will charge them to place an article or a link on my blog, just because that's a form of advertising. However, if they're just, you know, bloggers or writers and they just want to get their stuff known and they're not trying to sell anything to my audience, then I'll let them place it on there for free.
So let me ask you for some of your experiences then about places that you've been to. Out of all of the places you've visited in the world, Ron, what is your favorite and why?
I would say it definitely goes back down to the Caribbean, you know, just because I love the Caribbean region. It's just, you know, who doesn't love, you know, sunny weather, white sand beaches and, you know, clear waters. So it's always been a big passion of mine. And I think my next major journey coming up is going to be in the Caribbean. I'm actually getting a sailboat and I plan on sailing around all of the different island countries down there for the next probably 6 to 8 months or so, maybe even longer. But I actually really enjoy Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is a beautiful country, or beautiful island, beautiful country. And especially for like friends and family back here in North America and from my home country, it's something that they don't have to have a passport to actually visit. So I can recommend a lot of people to go there, and I can recommend a lot of locations and activities to see and do.
So would your tip be San Juan, Old San Juan, or would you go elsewhere?
I would say stay in Old San Juan, and then if you can, get a rental car or even a scooter if you could. But I would say for comfort, get a rental car and check out the mountain, the jungles. Check out Island Culebra. Like, it's a beautiful, beautiful island and great snorkeling spots.
What would be the biggest tourist trap you've uncovered then, the place where perhaps you wouldn't go back?
So I find that a lot of people and a lot of backpackers are really starting to go to Southeast Asia. And I love Thailand. I love the food there, the people, the culture. Like, it's a wonderful location. However, I find that a lot of the prices and admission fees are a little outrageous as compared for the locals and the tourists, because the tourists, they'll be prorated and be so much more expensive. And I think it's kind of a ripoff in certain locations, a lot more than what it really should be.
Some places I know in Myanmar that there's dual pricing for going to some of the temples.
I do agree that, you know, obviously the tourism should help support the monuments in the local community. I have no doubts that, you know, they have good intentions behind it. But the price gouging is just a little bit higher than what I would personally be comfortable paying. So I would say, you know, go there once, pay the price, and then after that, try to check out more of the local destinations that, you know, they're actually more affordable and the price structure is a little bit more fair. Like the Grand Palace right in downtown, I thought that was priced a little outrageous. Just there in Bangkok, but whenever I traveled up to Tibet, I felt like whenever I was going through a lot of the places, especially in Lhasa, I felt like I was like a herd of cattle, you know, we're just kind of getting herded through the place. So I found that was like a real big tourist trap as well.
What is the best bit of advice you would give somebody that was embarking on travels?
The number one thing is to be open-minded in everything that you come across. You know, not everybody has bad intentions, but then again, not everybody has good intentions. So always try to be open-minded, but, you know, follow your intuition. And then the second thing I would say would be to be as flexible as possible, because you never know what kind of opportunities are going to come your way and what kind of experiences you'll be able to have.
I guess everybody asks you about getting the cheapest possible flight. I know there's different formula in certain days of the week and times of the year, but have you cracked this? Have you worked what the magic algebraic formula must be?
Keep your eye on a couple of different routes. Like, obviously, like I'm sure you've heard before, Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays are usually the best flights because they're the cheapest. You know, and try to look for the flights or the modes of transportation people don't want to take. So let's say people all want to fly out on Tuesday. We'll take the red eye flight on Tuesday. Usually the cost of the flight could be up to half as much as the price of the flight that would be during the day. So
you get cheaper deal if you're prepared to cope with sleep deprivation.
Yes, or like that, and as well as you'll be able to save money on accommodation doing that as well, because you can just kind of, you know, you're not getting a good night's rest, but you are sleeping on the plane if you're flying at night, so you'll be able to both save on the price of a flight as well as accommodation.
Do you read other bloggers' travel blogs regularly, or do you take the view that they're competitors and you'd rather not see what they're doing?
Oh, no. I definitely read other bloggers, and I have a few that I actually follow, you know, faithfully and religiously. I follow them along because they, you know, bloggers have great content, and I'm colleagues and friends with many, many bloggers. But I also do take the competitive route where I see, you know, where they're getting their traffic from, and I see, you know, what kind of marketing that they're doing, and I take a little bit here and there to kind of apply it to my situation and my blog to see, you know, how it affects my traffic.
So what's next then, finally, for Active Planet Travels? Have you got any development plans you can share with us for the future?
Sure, yeah. So, like, I just finished my first book, and I'm working on book number two actually right now. So that is the reason I've been in Denver, Colorado for the past couple of weeks. But my next big trip is, like I mentioned earlier, going to be down in the Caribbean. I plan on getting a sailboat and go sailing for quite some time.
And you're going with a schnauzer.
And I plan on going with the schnauzer, yeah. He's my little buddy.
So will your buddy be part of your blogging?
Yes, I do plan on introducing him to everybody that, you know, follows along with the adventures and the journeys. So I've already posted a few pictures of him on, like, Facebook, Twitter, and all, you know, all the social media channels. And I've gotten quite the feedback. A lot of people are excited to see how I'm even going to break into that entirely new niche of traveling with animals and traveling with a dog. So it's going to be quite the challenge, but I'm up for it, and I couldn't imagine living without my little buddy now. So,
yeah, it'll be interesting reading your experiences.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
As always. Ron, thanks for talking with us.
Oh, thank you so much, Kerry. Have a good day.